The following is a presentation of Morning Drive Media.
Broadcasting from beautiful Burbank, California, this is Life Ranked on the Knapsack Files podcast feed. The concept of the show is pretty simple. We got a topic, I got a guest, and we're going to ask them to give five things, five reasons, five answers to support the topic. It's Life Ranked. That's how it works. So with me is a wonderful guest you just recently heard on the Knapsack Files proper sit-down whiskey-in-hand interview. It is producer Owen Mugen. How are you?
I'm good, Ken. How you doing?
I'm doing spectacular.
Glad to be back.
I like talking to you.
I like talking to you.
And I like talking to you with headphones and microphones on.
Yep.
We should do more of this.
It is. It's the sound of our dulcet tones.
Yes, absolutely. It's 5:45 here in the morning. We're going to Owen with a check of the weather. I want to talk about Saturday Night Live with you.
All right.
You are a producer of a great documentary called Live from New York, made about 2015. Yeah. Covers the 40th year of SNL, but also the history, this and that. I'm a big Saturday Night Live
guy. You sure are.
And you grew up a Saturday Night Live fan. You knew all about it. You know the importance. You know the history.
Yep.
So as someone who has had amazing access, it's not necessarily easy to get access from an outsider point of view, and your production did.
Yeah. As I mentioned the last time we were together, our executive producer, JL Pomeroy, she leveraged a very thin relationship with Lorne Michaels, you know, just having met at a thing she produced, into full access. I mean, we got in there. We spent more than 12 weeks at 30 Rock interviewing all these people, just being there for dress rehearsals, being there for live show nights, being there for all of it, being there for meetings, being up there on the 17th floor with the writers as they're crafting it, at 2-3 in the morning. It was amazing.
Love it. Yeah. Fascinating stuff. So I love discussing Saturday Night Live. And there's a lot of people in my life that I could pull them in and we could do hours on this show.
Oh, yeah.
SNL historians. But I want to ask you, what are your this is the definitive list for all of history.
Oh, damn it.
The five best Saturday Night Live cast members. Now, they could be underrated cast members.
Mm-hmm.
They could be because of cultural impact. They could just be the biggest stars of the biggest stars. But I want to know, and their time on SNL, and I'm sure after might factor into it, your five, working 5-1. But we're going
to
discuss it.
Ooh, 5-1.
5-1. I have some of my answers. I on my show Star Wars Ranked, I go a little bit more number five. We're just going to have a discussion here with your five choices and go from there. Do you think you're up to it?
I think I'm up to it.
Do you need some more whiskey?
I think I may. Actually, I mean, this is because, if this is for all time, damn it, this is going to be.
This is, as clink the glass here, it is, as Count Rugen would say, for posterity.
Yes, for posterity. I will hop in with both feet, and I will start with Tim Kazurinsky. No. Although I always liked Tim Kazurinsky.
That monkey.
The chimp.
Exactly,
the
chimp sketch.
Yeah.
Come on.
I'm going to put Leslie Jones at 5 for a couple of reasons.
Okay.
Leslie, and full disclosure, I know Leslie. I've worked with Leslie before SNL, and as we spoke about last time I was with you, I know the Schmoes and she. I met those guys at the same time.
Yeah.
And so entering into my personal SNL experience, working there, doing my movie in their playground, just as she was starting off, I got to see something amazing happened. I got to see someone who had been on the road, who had been a journeyman comic, and who was doing, my rinky-dink show on that old channel.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, out in front.
Yeah.
And I was able to watch her take it by the horns. And I was able to watch her explode. And so there's one experience I had with her, which is that.
Mm-hmm.
But I watch her now, and it's like she's fearless.
Yes.
And she's got she infused that place with an energy that doesn't come along all the time. Sometimes the show that's been on the air as long as that one has, you have these periods where it can almost seem anemic,
Yes.
But she smashed some real energy into it. And people say, oh, she's sort of a one note, blah, blah, blah. I think she makes me laugh and she makes me sit up.
Yes. She might not be one of the top actors yet. She's also getting roles and everything like that. I understand that note, but here's what I've said this before, and people can dig this up. I think I said it on Schmoes.
if you're familiar with Ken Burns' documentary Baseball, and the late great Buck O'Neill from the Negro Leagues is on there talking about hearing the sound a baseball bat makes and how he's heard the sound three times. It was like Babe Ruth, Josh Gibson, and Bo Jackson. All of baseball, nearly 100 years that Buck O'Neill was alive, he said those are the three times he heard a specific sound, more than any other bat ever swung. What I've said about Leslie Jones is when she came on scene, hired as a writer, breaks through with this. She was still a writer when she had that big Weekend Update moment.
Right.
Said something funny from the heart. She has a danger, and I mean in a good way, a dangerous energy. Not seen since Eddie Murphy,
yep.
Dan Aykroyd, John Belushi.
Agreed. And danger is the way yep. to really phrase it. And you're right. And if you're yeah. working in a live setting,
yeah.
you want danger.
Yeah.
You want a sense that this thing may flip off the rails yes. at any second.
Yeah, and so all the other greats, and I'm sure some on your list, and some on my list too. And this goes, you know, Dana Carvey, Mike Myers had something to it, but they were these performers. You knew when Mike Myers is coming on, and you were going to get a good, well constructed sketch. With Leslie Jones, it comes from something else. It comes from this history, this life. Now, Aykroyd was 20 with an SNL, so it's not necessarily all about age, but right. it comes from a point of view. And she absolutely, when she does her stuff, and she's on, particularly on Weekend Update, where I think she signs it as a correspondent. It is a electric energy.
It is. It's
not seen in decades.
I agree.
On the show.
I agree. And maybe, you know what, polish, maybe not 1,000. It's just like Kylo Ren's lightsaber. You know, it's going yeah. it'll still take you apart. It yeah. may not be the best made saber in the world, but it'll take you apart. And that's when she delivers that in spades.
Yes.
You know,
I am on board with that choice. Leslie Jones bringing something else to the show. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of very talented, but, you know, manufactured UCB sketch comics.
Right.
Isn't a bad thing.
No.
But people, and we'll get off Leslie Jones as a list here, but I love it's an inspired choice because Saturday Night Live's been around so long, when you get to the show, you're going to learn, but you know how to do it.
Right.
You've watched your whole life.
That's right.
In 75, they didn't know what they were doing.
Nope.
So Belushi and Aykroyd brought themselves. Leslie Jones is not the template. She brought herself.
Right. Oh, well said. Yep.
All right. That's for your sure. number five.
All right.
Your number four.
Man. All right. I was talking about this with my wife before I got here, and I didn't have Farley on my list, and I'm kind of rethinking that in a way.
Okay.
And I'm putting him there, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure if I'm putting him there because he was so pure in his comedy, mm-hmm. or if he did. You know, he had the wonderful physicality to go yeah. with his size, or if it was the sweetness that always seemed to shine through with him.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go with him at four.
I think that's good.
I think, you know, there are types, right? There are utility guys. There are impressionists. There are people who fill roles within any particular roster.
Right.
And he was a guy who... the sweetness is what it was for me.
Yeah.
I don't know. And maybe that's not, you know, is that a comedy goal necessarily? I rooted for him all the time. I was behind him all the time. And for me,
yeah,
that worked.
It's a great way to say that rooted for, because again, talking about, he had an energy too that was electric, but it wasn't dangerous.
Right.
You said he was sweet, and that was his thing. Yeah. Fat guy fall down. You could see some of self-loathing. I remember early on, I think his first season, he was doing a Tom Arnold thing, like pretending to be Tom Arnold. And they had Roseanne doing, you know, someone was playing Roseanne, and he gets all crazy and physical, and his pants kind of fell down. And Dennis Miller's like, "Did I just see the new guy's butt?" And it was this moment where you just like, you could tell they were like, they already kind of like, "Who's this kid coming along?" And you knew everyone else, Spade and all these guys tell the stories and how lovable he was and how tragic all that stuff was. But it was a different kind of energy. But, yeah, there was a sweetness to it. You were rooting for him, and that's a great way to say it.
Yep. Three?
Yeah.
All right. Again, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, asking me what's my favorite movie depends on my mood, you know.
Your list could change next week if I asked you.
Right, exactly. I'm sticking with my number one, so let me go to three. I'm going to go Eddie Murphy.
Okay.
At three.
You cannot go wrong with Murphy.
No. And okay, so I was, what, 80 he came on? Or was it 80?
80. Late 80, because he was part of that Gene Dominion fire year.
That one year, yeah.
He and Piscopo got kept, yeah.
And he changed everything.
Yeah.
And of course, he exploded beyond that place in a way that quickly. But I remember, you know, the first time watching, you know, Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood, you know, and saying, you know, because of course I was only 10, you know, and I wasn't too far away from Mr. Rogers.
Yeah.
You know? And so, but also he was young.
Oh yeah, he was a
and that 20, red. He was like 19.
19. I think he was 19. Right?
And but what I remember most and what really cemented it beyond like his mastery,
yeah,
and all that, which continued. I mean, one of my favorite sketches is Piscopo and he doing Ebony and Ivory.
Yeah,
you know, I am black and what was it? I am black and you are white. You are blind as a bat and I have sight. Piscopo does not make my list, by the way, but you know, God bless him. But I remember seeing there was a show called Live at Five, which was also shot in 30 Rock, and it was a local news show that had like, you know, guests and all that. And Sue Simmons, who was one of the great news people of all time, interviewed him. And in the middle of the interview, the lights went off.
Yeah.
And all you could hear is that laugh, that Eddie Murphy laugh, you know, whatever it was. That always stuck with me. But it was just his energy.
Yeah.
He was just so good. He was so fast, you know. Yeah. And all the things that are cliches now.
Yeah.
Are things we're still talking about, you know, James Brown, buckwheat, you know,
that's some of the best stuff.
I mean, really, really heavy stuff to stick with me that long.
Yeah.
After, before he went out on his own, before Delirious, you know, before 48 Hours, before all that stuff. So,
yeah. And 48 Hours, he was a first cast member to host while he was a cast member.
And that upset some people too.
It did very much so, very much so. But again, we talk about that dangerous energy, anything he was. And I think Piscopo deserves a lot of credit as well. He was one of the bigger stars in the world at the time in comedy, but just didn't translate afterwards. But yeah, Murphy saved the show without a doubt during a dark period until that free agent year, which kind of changed the show anyways. But Ebersol was smart to keep him going, all that kind of stuff. But like, it always seemed when you go back and watch some of that stuff that he just was on another level.
Yep.
It was his own show.
It was. And he was arguably the biggest guy to come out of that show.
Yeah.
During a time when Lorne Michaels had nothing to do with it.
Which is, I'm glad Murphy came back for the 40th, and I know it was a weird appearance.
I wish he did some comedy.
Yeah. No, it was a weird appearance, but I was glad to at least see it because for so long it had just been this thing. I don't know why. You could guess why Michaels did Michaels not want him back? Did he not want to come back? Combination of all of it.
I thought it was like David Spade mocked him during Update or something.
Yes.
Is a story I heard.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. Yeah. During his Hollywood Minute stuff.
Right, right.
Oh, Spadely.
Yeah, yeah. all right, two, and these are interchangeable. And I feel like I'm not giving particularly challenging choices here. I'm going to go with Will Ferrell as two.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
Utility man par excellence. He was deeply in it during 9/11 and during the Bush years and he did some indelible stuff. But he was just so damn funny, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, he had he was able to channel anger beneath
suburban anger.
Yes, suburban anger. Yeah. Wait, what was that like? There was a barbecue one and it just began.
That's his first sketch.
Right.
That's his first sketch.
Awesome.
And he used to do that at the Groundlings, but that was his first sketch.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get off that shed.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so he's, you know, he's almost, I think, you know, is he's not run his course, but he's not shining as brightly for me in a lot of ways now.
Yeah,
down the year. I think he sort of peaked with Old School, you know, and which is 2003, I guess.
Yeah.
Right? But you look at that show, and Jackie, my wife, and I were watching his best of not long ago, and it was just hit after hit after hit after hit, and it was like, you know, he always at least, you know, hit a double, you know.
Always, you know. And your eyes are always on him.
Right,
he's such a nice guy. A different kind of energy. Energy is key. Energy is key. I'm going to keep saying that word because you have to pop off that screen, and he absolutely did. And that first year, you know, there were so many things being thrown at the wall. That 95 season, SNL was so close to being canceled.
Yeah.
So I think him and Sherry O'Terry come in and bring a safe energy. It was a safe energy, but a crazy comedy style. Will Ferrell's kind of got that obtuse, weird humor, too.
Yeah.
But middle America fell for him.
Absolutely. My number one is probably not going to – do you want to guess?
Could you give me an era? I'll say Bill Murray.
No. Interesting. It could have been. It's Hartman.
Okay. Much respect.
Now, for a bunch of reasons, he's a guy who had a foot in two different eras, as far as I was concerned. Yeah. He recognized old television.
Yes.
And knew how to work the tropes and knew how to do the things that we all heard. You know, that voice and the announcer, you know, that sort of, you know, unfrozen caveman lawyer.
Yes.
On paper, funny.
On paper, I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, I'm going to fast forward the sketch.
But then he's going and he turns to the jury. But I'm just a caveman. You know, what's the line? Like, you know, I don't understand things like fire.
I understand your modern ways.
You know, that's genius.
Yes.
You know, and talk about a utility guy. He could do everything, and he did.
He was a leading man when he needed to be. Yeah. He was subversive. He was over the top. I used to love. So that's kind of like my era. You always say SNL. Your favorite SNL cast is like might be your college years, but for me, it was started a little earlier when I was in junior high, a little younger than you, obviously, but not by much. I used to sit there at the lunch table in my junior high, and I would do Phil Hartman's Anal Retentive Chef bit. You know, we're going to put the cozy on the macaroons on, glued so even that, and there was just so much stuff there and a sweetness to it as well. But he was. And again, someone, you know, we talked about it a little bit when you were on the Knapsack Fuss for the interview portion here, just like, you know, I could talk about starting late. He had a graphic design career.
Right.
Designed rock albums.
Right.
Working out there in L.A.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, crazy to think about. And then, you know, starts going to the Groundlings when it's just kind of forming up after the initial period of Gary Austin. And then he was the father figure there to a lot of people, the older brother and kind of the guy who already owned his own car and like all that. And he kind of carried that over to SNL in kind of this spectacular way.
Yeah. And I think, and this is not an, I don't know where we would include this, but I got to mention Don Pardo.
Absolutely.
Because talk about bridging generations as well. And that's part of why Michaels hired him.
Oh, really? Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Well, he was a known quantity and he was sort of there. But like, listen to, I mean, he's still to me the voice of the place. You know, he's as much that show as is the Howard Shore music.
Yes.
You know. And to hear him and everyone I spoke to 201, he died in the middle of production of our film. I'd asked everyone regardless, you know, everyone that I interviewed, you know, cast members or hosts,
right.
You know, what was it like hearing that man say your name?
Right.
And everyone was like, it made everything real. You know, Fred Armisen said, you know, his mother used to love him from Jeopardy.
You know?
And then his mom, and how his mom freaked, you know, when she heard this man say her boy's name on television, you know.
The Jeopardy guy saying.
Yeah, you know, and.
Old school Jeopardy.
And like, and there's a clip that we use in the documentary where he's essentially performing with Frank Zappa.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it's great. And it's out of its mind, you know. And
yeah,
it's
an old kind of radio broadcast guy with Zappa.
But he got it.
Yeah.
You know? And so he, to me, needs an honorable mention.
He got it is a great phrase about Don Pardo because, SNL was started in large part to take down the establishment, to take down TV as it was at the time, which sometimes was what I think SNL, when it's at its worst in the last decade, and I am one of the people who always have faith in each week.
Mm-hmm.
A bad show can be followed by a great show. I don't think SNL sucks. It's Saturday Night Dead has never been true.
Right.
But Pardo got he was that, like you said, the bridge in the gap, but he got what the young kids were doing, and I think that was key.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's a very big part of it. Yeah. And for me also, as a New Yorker growing up, his voice was also the voice of our local NBC affiliate.
Was it?
Yeah, so we heard him all the time, and that was a great thing about it. He would, you know, walk down and do whatever he did in 8H, and they'd walk down to, you know, News 4 New York and do the announcing there. Da-da-da. And it's like, there he was, you know, Pardo everywhere.
I'll tell you, I mean, my two childhood dreams that have not come true, at least yet, one of them has a better chance of coming true still.
Killing a unicorn?
No, killing a unicorn. I wanted to be the starting catcher for the New York Yankees, or I wanted to be a Weekend Update anchor for SNL. More likely to be the starting catcher for the Yankees at this point, but I needed to hear Bob Shepard say my name in Yankee Stadium, and or Don Pardo to announce me on 8H, and
what did Ron Shepard had, huh?
Yeah, yeah. 86. Right there. I mean, then I love the Derek Jeter to his final at bat. Had a recording of Shepard giving his name out because number two shortstop Derek Jeter. Number two, just the greatest thing. So yeah, Pardo was definitely part of that tapestry that
now,
made it.
How does do you get to tell me your five now?
I'll run through it. Yeah, let's do it here. It's changed over the years.
Okay.
It's changed over the years. So I'm gonna try to do this as best I can here. Okay. I'm gonna say my number five. I mean, God, this absolutely has changed because I've given this list before, but time changes things.
Yep.
I will say my number five is Dana Carvey.
Okay.
Now talk about eras. Carvey was the biggest star in the world at that point to me. At his peak.
You almost did as Mickey Rooney. Yeah. Biggest star in the
biggest
world.
Biggest star in the world. Two decades, 1939 to 1940. He was Carvey. When the movie Opportunity Knocks came out, which was his first big, it's a crappy movie.
Yep.
Though Robert Loggia is in it, and I love anything with Robert Loggia. Mr. President, I'll stand by your side.
it's a good Loggia.
I love Loggia. That was when it was like, oh, this might not translate, you know.
Right.
But I still love Carvey, so I still have a memory because he just was, we meant like Piscopo, It's easy to say, the people that have gone on, Murphy, obviously, better than Piscopo in that regard for legacy. But Piscopo was everywhere at that time. And so Carvey was like that for me. So my number five is Carvey. My number four.
May I interject something quickly?
Oh, please.
Before you
have
about Carvey.
Shoot back.
I hate to keep going back to to the movie, but it was just such a massive experience all around. So I interviewed him, Dana Carvey, in 8H.
Mm-hmm.
And
love it.
And we're sitting across from each other this far away.
Yeah.
And I look down at my list, and he church ladies me. Just, look at you with your little list with your questions on there. Aren't you special? And I was like,
I would have gotten kidding.
All right, number four.
My number four, I'm going to say, and this is one that has definitely changed over the years, is Bill Hader.
Oh, damn. You know what? Okay.
Hader snuck up on me. Hader was funny, smart. His voices were good, impersonations were good, and impersonations can kind of go by. But then he talk about utility player who became a star. He just was one of those ones that any time, much like a little bit like Will Ferrell to me, this suburbanite kind of style that you could easily say was tame, but to come on and do Stefan. To come on and do a over-the-top gay character in this day and age when you're a straight white male could have been horrible.
Right.
But Hader brought something to it that just is amazing.
he did.
And then the writers got to give credit to them for playing around with him as well. But so Hader's in there for me.
Hey, that's a great choice. And that's funny. So many that I could have thought of. But yeah, he just went right by me.
Look, Dennis Miller is one of the greatest influences of my career. His stand is a week in Update. I wouldn't include him on here. He's like the Beatles to me. It's like that's something different.
Right. Yeah. It's
Update
different.
Was the thing I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. That's my thing. That's part of why I do the Schmoes News, all that kind of stuff. But he wasn't a sketch
Pit
guy. Pit
Boss,
baby. Miller's not. He wasn't a sketch guy. Him in sketches was a joke.
But you're right. Absolutely. You know? The only sketch I actually even actively remember him in was the Matthew Broderick, penis thing. Yeah.
How's your penis?
Penis.
Good. And I think he played Coco the Clown famously in one sketch. It's listed as there. If you look at the 15th anniversary book, which I have, it's on my shelf over there. We'll dig it up after we record here. Mm-hmm. He talks about it. Four is Hader. Three, I will go. I'm going to put Kristen Wiig on.
Okay.
I'd like to put Gilda Radner on. It's very important to have a female presence on this list. But I see, and this is Kristen, someone I knew personally at the Groundlings. I saw work. I was on stage with her. Kristen was – I wrote sketches with her, and it was in the middle of one of my sketches that she was performing and got a huge laugh on a line. I was like, I'm in a – league far below her.
Right.
So I think what she did, she brought an acting style to a sketch show, which is what the Groundlings was teaching at the time. It was about acting first. And I think as you know, Tina Fey deserves a big place, mm-hmm. but her contributions have a lot more to do with writing, I think, than performing.
Right.
I think Kristen brought some legitimacy to it, and to transition into a movie star out of it as well is important. But I think. In this modern era of giving women front and center shot, I think Kristen was the first one to really break through in that regard. Tina Fey changed the show in a lot of ways, and as did Amy Poehler. I could put them on the list, but I think there's something about, and I'm just maybe connected to her as an old school fan, mm-hmm. back watching doing sketches in 2000, I just think she was an anchor to a quiet leader.
I agree. I think, and pound for pound, you look at her, I mean,
yeah.
What she would do week after week, and the variety, and the great energy that went with it. I agree. I think it's a great choice.
And there's some characters. You know, she had some similarities to some of her characters.
Sure,
I heard some of those critiques as well. But it's like, yeah, she did the Target Lady, but then remember her and Sudeikis did the A-hole. Oh,
the
sketches. A-hole.
I thought about the A-hole couple the other day for
A-hole
some reason. I think because I ran into a A-hole couple on the street, that was terrific.
And I think it's no small feat that her send-off was one of the more heartfelt. Mm. Fourth wall breaking send-offs that caused Lorne Michaels to come out and dance with her.
Right.
Lorne hasn't done that for a lot of people.
That is very true. Yeah. That is very true. It's a good point.
A lot of people there.
She's tremendous.
So my number two
mm-hmm.
is Bill Murray.
Okay.
Bill Murray was the first... It's the first time that the show proved it could regenerate itself, because how do you lose Chevy Chase and it's still going? Chevy Chase was the star of the first season. He was the star that took over America, simply because he was good.
Right.
I can't take that away from Chevy. His career has gone different time. It's gone up and down. I loved him on Community, but then Chevy's a difficult person.
He's got a reputation that harms him sometimes.
Yes, absolutely. With good reason for some of it.
Sure.
But I'm not there.
Right.
I'm not there. But he said it. I said my name every week. The Lorne Michaels didn't believe in the Walter Crankcase school of comedy. You say your name, you're Chevy Chase, and you're not. I'm Chevy Chase, and you're not. So that helped. But so to lose that guy a week or two into the second season, so he can go off and chase his girlfriend and go chase Hollywood success, and to have Bill Murray come in, struggle, and then prove, nope, you're going to forget about that other guy.
Right.
I'm here now. That proved the show had staying power beyond the first cast.
That's a great way to contextualize it, too.
Right.
Huh, that's interesting. One thing Chase said about – I call him Chevy because we're both in showbiz. in the interview in the movie, he said that part of this spirit that filled him, this countercultural thing was – when they had a TV growing up, his grandfather would walk past it and look at the TV and go, "You lie." And he was like, "All right, time to destroy television."
And that's what the first 5 years of SNL were about.
Yeah.
It was absolutely about that.
Yeah. They were the first 5 years, and I'm it's killing me. I can't remember the last name of the guy. Keith, who's one of the set designers. He's been there since 80, 81. He said for the first 5 or so years, SNL was ahead of the culture.
Yes.
And then it began to follow the culture, which is an interesting observation.
It became the culture. Became a marketing machine. It became this. Became that. It became how to build movie stars.
Right.
And that's why I say, no fault of their own, the cast members that might come on now, you have most of the cast members now, we're getting to the point, will be younger than the show.
Exactly.
And I think you come on and you know how to do it. It's like you've seen Spinal Tap enough to know how to be a rock band.
Right.
And you can never go back. You can never go back to the beginning. But I'm fascinated with eras. So the Sunset Strip during the 60s, when my late uncle Nick used to tell me of seeing the Doors as the house band at the Whiskey before they released their first album. And I used to walk on the street and run into Mike Love and Brian Wilson. Mm-hmm. I'm fascinated by that. I'm fascinated by stand-up in certain eras. And SNL, the first 5 years, as fascinating as it is and continues to be, those first 5 years were fantastic. And Bill Murray's part of that to me.
Big time.
And brings that attitude. His energy was different, but he brought an attitude that was very much of the show.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Yeah, no, he had an attitude that was, I would say, like Dennis Miller may have taken a cue.
So my number one.
All right, let's hear it.
There's a lot on this list.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say who I sometimes would consider picking, but I don't. And he's probably number six honorable mention is Mike Myers.
Okay.
Again, of my era.
Right.
So you can on the shelf there. I have both copies of Wayne's World, and next to it is the Wayne's World book released in 1992.
Oh, my gosh. Was it the novelization?
No.
Did Alan Dean Foster write it?
It's before the movie came out. It's a little comedy book. And one of my favorite things in it is it's because it's like written from the point of view of Wayne and Garth.
Right.
And there's like Wayne fills out like a little application and it says occupation and it says international man of mystery. And then Austin Powers comes out.
That's great.
Five, six years later.
The seeding of it all.
I think that's what Myers did. I think Myers help establish what it's like to be a professional scientific sketch performer and bring a controlled energy, but also be the funniest guy in the world.
That's very well said. Because he's an awesome technician.
Yes, technician, like a Wade Boggs.
Right.
You know, just go out there, Tony Gwynn, going to put line drives in left field all day.
Right.
and when he wants to homer, he'll homer. But, so there's probably a point in my life I would have put him number one. But my number, all-time number one, I think you're either a Belushi guy or an Aykroyd guy, and I am an Aykroyd guy.
Okay, why?
Dan... It's like Lennon and McCartney. I'm a Beatles guy, too. Lennon gets the credit now, deservedly so, for being the avant-garde artist guy who ran off with Yoko and he did all the weird things. And McCartney will say, yeah, I'm the silly little love song guy, but I got there first. John didn't want the art. John was a commercial guy who didn't care. I was the one crafting songs. I pushed Sgt. Pepper. I pushed this. And history, you know, has a weird view of McCartney sometimes. And McCartney is a silly little love song guy, too.
That's a great reference, though.
Yeah. Aykroyd, they were the bully boys of comedy. Right. They were a team. Aykroyd is this 20-year-old on a motorcycle and a leather jacket coming down from Toronto with a violent energy, almost to a negative. There's some things. You know, Aykroyd was in the news recently with some kind of outburst. I can't remember exactly what it was. I was kind of, yeah, he's still Aykroyd.
Right.
And in that book, the Saturday Night, the first 5 years of Saturday Night Live, the backstage, I forget the actual title. It's out of print. Look it up. You can find copies online. It talks about him getting pissed off at NBC over some stuff with that trip to New Orleans where they did the show live from Mardi Gras.
Yeah, insane episode.
And Aykroyd, and I'm not recommending this, guys, to do this at your work. Aykroyd tore apart the lobby of, I believe, either 8H or 17 on the 17th floor. Tore it apart. Put tables through walls or chairs through walls. He had this violent, uncontrollable energy to it that Belushi brought on screen. And Belushi's great, but... Right. There's something about Aykroyd because Belushi, I personally took him as more a blunt object, where Aykroyd was a controlled rage.
Right.
That came on, and Bassomatic is a great example of that.
I hadn't thought about it that way at all, and that's
and he brought, you know, where again Belushi did spectacular stuff. They're Hall of Famers, both of them in my book. But where Aykroyd or Belushi's swinging swords and doing that stuff, which is funny, you know, Aykroyd's coming in with the cone hats.
Mm-hmm.
Aykroyd's coming in with wild and crazy guys with Martin and Steve Martin to me is the best host of all time of the show.
I agree.
Baldwin's great too as well. But so for me it comes down to Aykroyd personifying, along with Chevy Chase, along with Bill Murray's attitude, Gilda Radner's America's Sweetheart vibe, Curtin's smartness, Lorraine Newman's West Coast chic, Garrett Morris's old school kind of craziness, and Belushi. But Aykroyd brought Let's Tear It All Down.
Right.
And that's what I love about him.
That's well put. Huh. Interesting. I didn't thought of Aykroyd quite that. No, good contextualized quite that way, but you're right.
Yeah. And 100% different than Hartman, which Hartman, I love. Hartman could be on my list, too. Hartman's one of my favorites. Time, and I still go over to the Groundling sometimes to catch a show, and above the theater on the main, because they have several buildings now, they have the school, but in the main on the Melrose side, they got In Memory of Phil Hartman. And I remember every time I'd perform on that stage, I'd look up on that and, you know, just kind of do a tap your heart type of thing.
That was a sad, crappy day in news when we covered that.
I remember that.
Oh, so awful.
Yeah, I remember that.
But
so that's my list.
That's a great list. And it's interesting, you talk about what those first 5 years and what they were coming from, you know, what predated those first 5 years. You were 75 was the year the Vietnam War ended. You know, we were just still beginning to just process Watergate and the betrayal of a president, or the betrayal of a country by the president. And like you look at like this last season, you know, no matter where one sits in the political spectrum, you talk about, you know, I was saying to a friend of mine the other day, I wish we could have done our movie this season.
Oh,
you
know, would have been fantastic.
It's awesome. But can you imagine just, I mean, the show, it got 22 Emmy nominations this year. When was the last time that happened?
That's been a long time.
Yeah,
because it hit the it's like the nation could kind of turn to Saturday Night Live to maybe help make sense of it. Laugh at it as best you can, and, right. and that makes some sense. And that brought that you could sense it was different.
Yeah.
What do you think about? I loved it, but what do you think about Baldwin playing Trump and taking the role from a cast member?
I think you know as that show is shown time and again, whatever works best is what they'll do. You know, and
that's a good point.
And I think it was great. I think it was a superior performance, you know.
Absolutely.
And it got, you know, it stopped being funny for a lot of people after November, you know.
Yeah. After it became real,
It became real. But I thought it was a terrific, energized and definitely, you know, you could tell how personal it was because people know how the president takes things very personally.
Yes.
So you knew each time it was just a big F you to this guy.
Well, it was a weird situation when you got, you know, I knew Mikey Day from back in the day too at the Groundlings, and here you know you got the president tweeting about Mikey Day saying he sucks. You know, it was a weird, surreal. I doubt Nixon would have tweeted that out in '75.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like
Gerald Ford goes on SNL because you know Chase is making fun of him falling. You know, like right.
But yeah, I couldn't imagine FDR, you know, ragging on you know Lou Costello. You know,
mm-hmm. And then you know, of course, Trump hosted there leading up to that too, which was a weird situation. And had hosted before, I believe, right?
I don't know
if he had hosted before, but I know he'd been. I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking of George Steinbrenner.
Right.
I might be thinking of Steinbrenner.
Or Billy Martin. Yeah.
Billy Martin.
Interesting thing, though. Last night I was listening to an interview. I hadn't listened to Howard Stern in ages, but Howard had David Letterman on yesterday,
and
they spent an hour and a half together. And give that a listen if you're interested.
I will. I have to because Letterman's my guy. Yeah.
And it was just so great to hear Dave again, but to hear he and Howard together. And they talk about SNL, and they talk about you know they talk about the president and all that kind of stuff. But just to hear you know these two big comic giants get into that a little bit, it's a side note, but it's worth checking out.
I will absolutely check it out. We could talk about Letterman for a while.
Oh my God, he's the best.
He was the best. Well, that was a great list.
That was.
I had fun doing that.
This was terrific.
I usually just let my guests go, but I think I'm glad you threw it back.
Well,
my face.
I wanted to hear it too because I know how much you love it. This is not like just as any. This is more than just any show for you.
Yeah,
you know,
it's got some history to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love it.
I wanted to find a place to put Denny Dillon, but I couldn't figure out where.
Dillon, so, you know. Gilbert Godfrey, Ben Stiller in '89, David Wayans could have been the best.
People. On the 17th floor, and there is. Now it runs all the way down the hallway, but there are headshots of every single person in the cast. And it's like, you know, wow, he was in there. He was in there. She was in there.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I'd forgotten.
Beth
like Bruce Cahill. McCullough we talked about.
McCullough. What, he and McKinney wrote in 85.
Yeah.
And then McKinney joined late 94?
Yeah, I always thought that was a bit odd that it seemed, not that it seemed like a step down, but it seemed as though he'd had a certain perch with Kids in the Hall that was odd to see him.
It was odd because, remember, Michael McKean joined around the same time. Yeah. And I think, you know, Christopher Guest, Harry Shearer, and McKean had been famously offered roles following Spinal Tap.
Right.
And Guest and Shear comes back, and Shear, the stories of Harry Shear and how difficult he is, we could talk, but he also was a genius. And I loved the stuff he did in that 84 season. And I think he's the first guy to quit and come back.
Right.
5 years apart, quit in 79.
His strongest skit, I think, was the synchronized swimming with he and Martin Short.
I
know you. You're pointing at him. You're not mad at him. I know you.
I love Christopher Guest, and he's a genius on another level. But
for
McKean to join in 94 was weird, too, as well. But it was like this weird – it was like Lorne Michaels was – I got what he was trying to do because in 84, Ebersole goes out and gets all the free agents and brings in the big guns.
Right.
And then I think it was Lorne Michaels' chance to maybe save his show by bringing in big guns. But it's hard to – as you learn in sports, you bring in a bunch of high-priced free agents, they don't necessarily get along.
No.
Not that it was fighting, but it was an odd chemistry. Chris Elliott joined that year too. Janine Garofalo.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't work out.
I love Chris Elliott. I love him on Letterman.
Elliot, get a life.
Get a life is great.
That submarine episode, Neptune 3000, what is it? It's one of the best episodes of television ever.
There's so much we could do. We could do 5 hours on SNL.
Absolutely could. Owen, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, man.
Your documentary, if you were part of producing this live from New York, where can people watch it?
It's funny. NBC bought it. Midstream as we were producing it, and they aired it in prime time.
Which was
awesome. It's like, holy, and it was really nice. I was actually walking to Christian Harloff's 40th birthday party.
Yeah,
and I had stopped for a little bite to eat beforehand, lined my stomach, and I walked past this Thai restaurant, and there it was. Just on TV. And I was like, this is cool.
I remember
seeing it in the wild.
Yeah.
It was so nice. But right now, it's not out anywhere.
Not out anywhere?
I mean, I can get you a copy. But
I'd like one. I think I was loaned a copy.
Right.
From Harloff. But I did watch it on TV. I'd love a copy because it's so great. Well, all right. You guys out there, tweet NBC and say, we want to watch this documentary because it is wonderful. It's fascinating.
Thank you, man.
And it's good. And thank you so much for coming in for both shows. And I appreciate it.
Ken, thanks for having me. Just fun to hang out and talk about these things that we both are really into.
Hey, I told you we're going to do 25 minutes. We're hitting 40.
See? Because
that
happens?
Was fun.
It was fun.
You and I have a good time talking. Guys, if you're out there and you have an idea on your favorite SNL cast members, you want to talk history with us, you can find Owen on Twitter at Owen Mugen, M-O-O-G-A. And me, Ken Knapsack, you know the drill, and use hashtag LifeRanked to join the conversation or hashtag The Knapsack Files. You can find us on Facebook. We're on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher. I'm trying for Google Play. I swear I am. It's just a little harder for a dummy like me to get a podcast on there. It's not plug and play. We do have a Patreon page, patreon.com/knapsackfiles, if you want to support special stuff on there with special episodes each month and bonus interviews. So that is it for all the great heroes of Saturday Night Live, past, present, and future. And for Owen, that is it. We'll see you next time. Life has been ranked.